You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
June the 5th, 2020, with the current situation and what we're seeing across our nation, many are coming forward and talking about we need police reform. We might well need police reform in certain areas, for sure, and particular acts. Yes, I'm in favor of always, always updating, reviewing, and reforming if things don't seem exactly right. But then you have the others coming forward. We want to defund the police. We want to dismantle the police. We want to abolish the police. Imagine, just imagine what would happen to our nation if we abolished police. And for all those in the streets protesting and shouting Black Lives Matter, you do understand. I hope you understand that if you defund police, if you start cutting funding, and if you end up abolishing police, your communities are likely to be suffering first under an assault of numerous thugs that come running without anyone calling them to account through your neighborhood, causing chaos, destruction, and death. I don't think they've thought that far ahead. They just know police are bad, get rid of them. Really? You want to try to live your life like there's enough problem already when we don't have enough officers because of funding to go into some areas when they need help immediately and it's too far away, too spread out. Would that help? Would that really help, especially minority communities? No. You know it wouldn't. But they are not thinking about that. They're using this as an effort to move farther to the left, get rid of the police. We had several protests yesterday and last night, not the violence we've been seeing, and that's good. Especially glad following the funeral service for George Floyd yesterday. Protesters at various places around the nation marching peacefully for the most part. St. Louis, a perfect example. In the meantime, Attorney General Barr says there is clear evidence Antifa has a hand in the violence. Yet mainstream media claims Antifa isn't a threat. You're going to hear from a former Antifa member over the next 2 hours explaining what Antifa has for an end game and how Antifa carries out its mission. Hey, on the economy, we've got some great news. Unemployment falling to 13.3% as we added another 2.5 million jobs. They were expecting that we would suddenly jump to around 19% unemployment. You know why it's changing? Because we are beginning to reopen the economy and getting folks back to work. And we need to continue doing that. New York City is one of those hardest hit. They need to get more folks back to work. They need to open up more. And they should take some relief in this latest number out of New York City, showing that no new confirmed deaths from COVID-19 in the last 24 hours. That'd be the first day since March 12th. We're going to be joined a little bit later in one of the hours by John LaBoutière, who lives about 20 miles from the epicenter in New York City, and get his take on what they're doing to reopen his city and the state. And, of course, I want to get his take on the protests we've had in the streets. And I want to keep in mind for you, and I'll remind you again, we have protest and then we have violence. We have protesters and we have rioters. Sometimes the rioters are mixed inside the protest. Sometimes they come out late, especially if it falls dark and the protest continues. But there's a clear distinction in most cases. Senator Cotton yesterday had a piece published in the New York Times as an op-ed. New York Times has just been flip-flopping like a fish on land all over on this story. We were in favor of giving him a voice. No, we weren't in favor. Yes, we were. No, we weren't. Maybe we shouldn't have. We didn't really look at his piece correctly. He says the editorial board of the New York Times now controlled by a mob of children. We'll get into that. And Drew Brees' comments and apologies and others coming forward to defend Drew Brees. When he said, I cannot respect anyone who won't stand for our flag. Drew Brees had been pushed into a corner, but yet, wait to hear some of those defending him. Because it's not always simply one way to look at something. Are we reached a point in this country where you cannot have your opinion unless you agree with Black Lives Matter activists, unless you believe with Antifa, your voice will not be heard? Before we wrap, I want to go back to Martin Luther King, August 1963. I have a dream. Lock and load. Ready. On the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
COVID-19 is a new health concern, but Wellington Environmental has 30 years experience to make your company and environment safe. Wellington Environmental can give you peace of mind, and the cost is very reasonable. These days, you can't take a chance that customers, employees, your family would be exposed to COVID-19. You have to be proactive. That starts by calling Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. You'll quickly see why customers have relied on Wellington Environmental for decades. COVID-19 can survive for hours on your furniture, your computers, your equipment, and every time someone touches that surface, they could be exposed. You don't want that liability. Call Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
My sponsors keep this program on the air, so my thanks to John Bill Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest, best quality, lowest price. So when you need a roof, remember this sponsor for this program, John Beale Roofing, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Facebook.
'Cause I saddle up my horse and I ride into the city. I make a lot of noise 'cause the girls, they are so pretty. Riding up and down Broadway on my own Studley Roy. And the girls say, save a horse.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
We have evidence that Antifa and other similar extremist groups, as well as actors of a variety of different political persuasions, have been involved in instigating and participating in the violent activity. And we are also seeing foreign actors playing all sides to exacerbate the violence.
Exactly. We have known it. We suspected it. Attorney General Barr confirming Antifa and other extremist groups, maybe some on the right, have been involved in these riots and causing violence, looting, fires, attacks on police. He said, we're now directing our 200 Joint Task Force members around the nation to assist law enforcement with apprehending and charging violent agitators who are hijacking peaceful protests on a national level. That word coming from FBI Director Christopher Wray. He said some of these groups have, quote, set out to sow discord and upheaval rather than join in the righteous pursuit of equality and justice. We've been saying that. And I've also been saying over and over, and I know you or most of you are aware and accept the fact that when you get something like this going on, you can certainly expect the extremists to come in and get actively involved, such as Antifa. And they're getting support from the left. They are getting support from the left because they keep kind of accepting, well, folks are angry. We understand why they're angry. We understand why they're doing this. No, we don't understand any reason for rioting, looting, and burning and attacking police. No. But even some of those in power, they're endorsing Antifa. Let me give you a perfect example. A perfect example. In Minneapolis, there's a city council member, president, I should say, Jeremiah Ellison. Now, he is the son of State Attorney General Keith Ellison. And, of course, this is the state where George Floyd was killed. And that's where the rioting first broke out. Some protests and then suddenly rioting in Minneapolis. And the son of the Attorney General, Keith Ellison, and you should know, Keith Ellison is as far left as you want to go, because he would move at any point to restate that he's a leftist. His son has grown up in that household, and he's got his own attitude as well, now being a city council member. He tweeted out the other day, "I hereby declare officially my support for Antifa. Unless someone can prove to me Antifa is behind the burning of black and immigrant-owned businesses in my ward, I'll keep focusing on stopping the white power terrorists. They are actually attacking us." He put that up on a tweet and then quickly pulled it back down. So he's accepting there's extremists are involved in these actions, but not Antifa, because I am going to support Antifa. And now he's saying, as a member of the city council of Minneapolis, we're going to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department. We're going to dismantle it. And another Democrat, the city council president, replied and agreed, "Yes, we're going to dismantle the Minneapolis Police Department." And then they say, "Well, we're going to replace it with a transformative new model of public safety." And not clear how they're going to dismantle it, not clear what they're going to come up with, but what they're going to do is basically handcuff police. I will guarantee you that's what they're going to start doing. And yes, police apparently, by everything we've seen, at least four officers in the death of George Floyd did not act properly. Is that an indictment against the entire Minneapolis Police Department? Many say it is. And there may well be some reasons to look closer at the department as a whole. And yes, it might be in need of reform. And in fact, the police union might need some reform. Because how does an officer, as Chauvinier the other day, who had his knee on the back of George Floyd, still have a job after 18 complaints and two letters of reprimand on two of those 18 complaints? The complaints might have been not totally accurate in each case, couldn't be backed up, whatever. But I got to tell you, I had to question why he's still on the force at that point anyway. See, that's where you start. You start where there's an issue. You don't just suddenly dismantle the police department. You're seeing the same thing out with general Democrats calling out for defunding or abolishing police departments. Well, there's a new survey that was conducted May 29th through the 30th, before the worst of the rioting in New York, Washington, Santa Monica, and other cities. And of this survey, conducted by YouGov poll, shows only 16% of Americans approve of defunding or abolishing police departments. Just 33% of black Americans approve of that. I think they realize what I stated in the opening monologue. If you do that, those who are going to be hurt the most would be in the minority community, where they need police protection. You start cutting funding, fewer officers to move around, less equipment, can't respond as quickly. And where do you think most of the crime occurs? And who do you think often is a victim of such crimes? Usually it's black on black or black on other minority, and it happens in those neighborhoods. Does it say that it can't happen in the gated mansion areas of Hollywood or anywhere else, but most of it's going to happen in those neighborhoods. The New York Times put out a piece today talking about where police reform has worked. I'm looking at the piece written by David Linhart. He said there are cases where police reform has happened and worked. He said it happened in L.A. where fatal police shootings have declined in each of the last 4 years, down to 12 last year. Happened in San Francisco, Baltimore, Chicago, Philadelphia, Phoenix, so forth and so on. And a data scientist and activist for 538 said many of these reforms were initiated in response to protest and public outcry over high-profile deaths. And the changes often involve and revolve around training officers to de-escalate situations. And here's a key point. Reduce the amount of force they use. And he also added tougher measures to get rid of violent officers also seems to help. And guess what? Adding this point, hiring more police officers sometimes also help. But if you're just going to start defunding and trying to get rid of them, they're not going to be hiring more officers. Those on the street are going to be overstressed, overtired, working too many shifts. And yes, they're liable to lose their cool when they shouldn't. Now, you might think, oh, I would never do that. I would be able to do it properly. Well, then why don't you join the police force? Why don't you get in there and put yourself on the front line and see how you would handle the situation? Defunding the police, cutting them back, reducing them. As I mentioned a moment ago, there is also a concern about police unions, and that's been pointed out again by a piece from the National Review by John Fund. And he's talking about that basically the unions, not in all cases, I want to make sure we understand this, but in often cases where we see a case where maybe an officer still on the force when maybe something should have been earlier or should have at least been reassigned, that many times maybe the police union was too involved in protecting the blue line rather than protecting the overall membership and those who have to go out and face the public on a constant basis. Police unions, like all unions, want to protect the interests of their members. That's understandable. But at some point you have to acknowledge this is not good for us as a union. That's not good for our police force in general. Another thing that's come up out of some of the incidents of violence and so forth in the past, something like body cams. That's a great idea. It's a great idea. But simply starting to talk about defunding, dismantling, what's that going to do? In Los Angeles, they're talking about slashing up to $150 million from the LAPD budget. $150 million right out of the police budget. And they're going to then put it in, they say, reinvesting into communities of color. Now, I don't know exactly what their plans are. I doubt they do. I think they're just trying to cozy up the Black Lives Matter activists and other groups trying to say, hey, we will have you at the forefront. We're going to take $150 million from the LAPD and put it into your communities. But if you don't provide and have adequate police protection for those communities, you're not helping them. And then for a member of the Minneapolis City Council to say, I'm in favor of Antifa. Gabriel Nadales is a former member of Antifa. And he was on a Fox News program the other day, and he was explaining the end game that Antifa has in mind and its goals. Just listen.
Look, Antifa is an organization that is made up of several different radical leftist organizations. They pretend that they're fighting against fascism, which is in the name, Antifa, anti-fascism. But unfortunately, Antifa is not really fighting against fascism. They're willing to fight anybody who does not share their leftist radical mentality of socialism and communism.
That should be very apparent. It should be apparent when we see Antifa surface at colleges when a conservative speaker is trying to make a point. No, freedom of speech does not apply to you. You have to speak only what we say. That's kind of what Drew Brees, New Orleans quarterback, is facing right now. We're going to deal with that in more detail the next hour. But they're in your face. If you disagree, you cannot have a disagreement. You got to go exactly the way they say, and otherwise, they'll cut you off at the knees, or they'll burn your house down if they can, or they'll attack you fully. And yet, we see constantly from the left mainstream media and its control, oh, they will give excuse after excuse for Antifa, and they will often find ways to downplay any threat from Antifa.
There are so few members of Antifa in general that to say that they really have anything significant to this protest is a kind of a far-right talking point.
The president has been obsessed with far-left protests, or groups, rather, including Antifa.
This fake idea of Antifa being some organization that we have to send United States might against, that's ridiculous.
That's a collection of some of the attitude you hear from the left. Because they don't accept that Antifa can be and is a real threat. But again, Gabriel Nadales, who was a member of Antifa, and he says, I got involved in one of the first events and I kind of got caught up in it. I mean, you know, I thought, yeah, I want to put on masks. I want to go do all that. And he said, then I began to realize, what are we doing? What are we doing? And what are we doing right? And what are we doing wrong? And he says, for those who think Antifa doesn't have that many members involved in each riot, they don't need to. They basically plant a seed and it grows quickly.
Well, of course they're downplaying it, but I mean, you don't need that many Antifa activists because it's called propaganda by the deed. It's a political tactic in which you enact violence against another with the hope and an intent that others will join in. That's exactly what happened. They started the riots and then normal Americans joined in as well.
That's absolutely true because others begin to say, hey, yeah, I want part of that. Sometimes they want to get involved in it because they think truly in their warped mind, I'm accomplishing something. But then you got others come rushing in saying, a chance to loot and burn and just run wild. And Antifa thrives on that kind of attitude. Even though they know that really doesn't supply their end goal either of changing the nation, but they're working on it. And then the difference between protest and riots and the confusion. Please stand by.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
You want to look better, stronger, leaner? Visit my trainer, Jamie, and his team at Red Fitness Lounge in Clayton. Red Fitness Lounge, redefining exercise, changing how you think and look at fitness, one client at a time. Check it out, redfitnesslounge.com, redfitnesslounge.com.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
It is amazing and yet at the same time not surprising that so many, especially on the left, don't understand the difference between protest versus riots. Protest, peaceful protest versus riots. The First Amendment guarantees you the right of peaceful assembly. Peaceful. Chris Cuomo the other day, CNN anchor, said, well, you know, that's where do it say protesters have to be polite and peaceful? Read the Constitution. But again, he's willing to accept that if protesters get out of hand, then that's still okay too. No, it's not. And yet it's just amplified by the mainstream media that when anything goes wrong in the street, as a protest becomes a riot, or maybe even started as a riot instead of a legitimate protest, mainstream media is always looking to blame Donald Trump.
He calls them thugs? Who is the thug here? Hiding in a bunker? Hiding behind a suit?
We are teetering on a dictatorship. Is the president declaring war on Americans? What is happening here?
The president had been saying incendiary things. Certainly, if you've been listening with any kind of open-mindedness, certainly not helpful things.
He's all but calling on authorities to crack skulls at these protests. It's just not something that you normally see in the United States of America. It's something that you see in more authoritarian countries.
Yeah, actually, in authoritarian countries, you wouldn't have a chance to speak out like you've been doing against this president. But you could do that in this country. And you're Jim Acosta, and they're saying President Trump is all but calling for knocking some skulls. But he hasn't called for knocking skulls of protesters. And again, they are not wanting to distinguish between protesters and riots, the same they don't want to distinguish between illegal immigrants and legal immigrants. Maxine Waters, Congresswoman, Democrat, California, in an interview says, you know, I don't like the term rioting. It's negative language used far too often, and it's a description of black people by folks who fundamentally don't see black people the same way they see whites and others. Congresswoman Waters, with all due respect, you're out to lunch. There are whites inside some of these riots as well. No one's calling them out for race. We're calling them out for their actions. Their actions define them as a rioting group at that point. But she says if you use the term riots, you're just using it to dismiss and demean black people. Well, let's take that one step farther from what you're suggesting. Look at the video, and I hate to say it, but if you look at the video, the protest and the violence, the arson, the looting, running through the street, rampaging, smashing windows, the video, even with masks on, will often show people of color. Does that mean every black citizen is doing? Of course not. And yet there are also whites mixed in, too. If you're looking at some people that are showing negative language affecting and hurting black people, look to the rioters and their color as they are out there thinking, I have a right to do this. Because I got someone like Congressman Maxine Waters saying, you can't call me a rioter. I'm a protester. Right. Right. Take a break. When we come back, I want to spend some time on this New York Times flip-flop involving Senator Cotton and his op-ed. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
I'm sure you have some alarms to let you know if someone breaks into your home. But what happens if your home is invaded by creatures? Six legs, eight legs, maybe more. Rodler Pest Solutions can help keep those pests out of your house. And if they're already inside, get them out. In fact, you can get a free, no-obligation inspection and estimate to protect your home. You can get that at any time. Go online to Rodler.com. Rodler.com, schedule your free inspection today. Rodler is the largest family-owned pest control business in Missouri. 10 locations, more than 200 team members. Plus, Rodler has a money-back guarantee. If you're not happy for any reason, they will make it right or your money back. You know, I first called Rodler more than 40 years ago, so I know they will take good care of you. I continue to trust Rodler. Rodler Pest Solutions, Rodler.com, Rodler.com.
Got me waking, bone man, waking around the fire. I want a little rain or water, that you won't let Jimmy start, big boy.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So here's a perfect example of how if you don't walk the proper line, if you're not going to accept that my way or the highway, you're going to be attacked constantly. And I'm talking about the left, even attacking other leftists. The New York Times the other day made a big, big blunder in the eyes of the left. They actually printed an editorial, an op-ed piece by Senator Tom Cotton, which talked about using federal troops to quiet the violence across the nation. How did he get that in to that op-ed piece? And then the fallout from it. And in the beginning, obviously, they printed it, so they were in support of it. And in fact, when the left began to attack even the New York Times, the editorial page editor and the Times publisher issued statements defending the publication of the op-ed by Senator Cotton. I want you to keep that in mind. Defending it. Defending. But then when they came under attack, even by members of the New York Times staff, especially minority members of the staff, is saying, you're making this dangerous. We are facing threats even coming to work now. We are in danger because of what you allowed Senator Cotton to put in our paper. And what happened then? Flip-flop. And they began to back away and say, well, you know, maybe we didn't look at it long enough. Maybe we should have done a better job of evaluating it and clarifying it and doing a better piece on it. They had agreed to put it in, and Senator Cotton says, listen, I have done a couple other op-ed pieces for them. And he said, there's always fact-checking. He said, it's always pretty rigorous. He said, this time around, there were at least three drafts back and forth. The Times would send along some edits for approval. Cotton team would sign off of it. Then there'd be another round. He said a couple rounds focused on just clarity and style. The last round on factual accuracy, and yet it was all correct. He said, we went through this repeatedly. Then we finally started getting into the weeds. They went through each sentence to make sure it was supported. And the link said what they were represented as saying. He said, we were challenged on a couple of things and actually made some changes. Back and forth over phone, email, and text before it was ever published. And then all hell broke loose. And the New York Times editorial board and publisher had to come forward and say, we defended it. We did it. We did a good due diligence. But then when their own members of their staff started saying, you're putting black lives working at the New York Times under a threat, then the backtracking started. And they started saying, you know, it's possible it really did not meet our standards. Here's Senator Cotton on his reaction to them flipping around like this, saying yes, no, like a turn signal on your car, on, off, listen.
I can tell you my op-ed doesn't meet the New York Times standards. It far exceeds their standards, which are normally full of left-wing sophomoric drivel. And I find it amazing that in the last 24 hours, the editor of the New York Times and the publisher of the New York Times have both defended their decision to publish this op-ed. But in the face of the woke mob of woke kids that are in their newsroom, they tucked tail and they ran. They confessed to they confessed and said they were going to go into re-education camp and they were going to cut the number of op-eds they run. And for that, I will apologize, or I will say to the world, you're welcome, for getting the New York Times to run less of the garbage that you normally see in their pages.
I love that. No, they did every bit of fact-checking on him before they published it. You want to write an opinion piece for the New York Times? You better back it up. And, of course, you're going to have some standing for it to appear, such as a senator and others, and we'll get to that in a moment. They did everything right, and Senator Cotton agrees that we went back and forth before they finally agreed, this is okay, we're going to publish it. And there was nothing wrong with it until those inside the paper began to complain that the leadership, the editorial board director, and the publisher don't understand. They don't understand. They're old and ancient. They're not woke. They're not the new culture. And they don't know by publishing that they're putting us in danger. And all the op-ed basically was pushing is that it's basically a need to bring in federal troops using the Insurrection Act to do so. In fact, Cotton says originally the idea was to pitch it on pushing for invoking the Insurrection Act. That was the idea, package that together with another proposal. But the editor's only interested in dealing with the Insurrection Act. And a member of the Cotton staff says there was some haggling back and forth over what angle and point of the piece should be. But finally, they end up approving it. Now they're saying, you know, we've got to be more diligent. We got to revise our standards in letting something like this appear in our paper. And why did they reach that conclusion? They reached that conclusion in the face of anger within their own staff and being called out for basically endorsing a right-wing idea in their vine and also accepting a Trump idea, maybe using the Insurrection Act, in everything that flies in the face of the leftist and the liberal New York Times. And yet, you look at some of the op-eds they have published previously, you look at some of the ones they have put on their pages, They have often pushed, promoted propaganda, not just of the left, but dictatorial governments. Listen.
But look, the New York Times has run editorials by Vladimir Putin, Recep Erdogan, by the Taliban. No problem there, but run one editorial from Tom Cotton that on a position that's supported by 58% of the American people, that we have a duty to protect our citizens' lives and livelihoods. Well, we're going to have to review our processes, and we're going to cut the number of op-eds that we run. A child mob truly is in charge at the New York Times tonight.
I think he properly described it. A child mob. The bigger part of the story is, one, fairness, two, journalistic integrity, and three, are you not allowed to have dissenting opinion? And that we're going to get into again in the next hour, reference to Drew Brees' case. You're just not allowed to have an opinion that we don't like. That is the basis also of Antifa that we talked about earlier. They want to tell you we're anti-fascist. You know what the fascists did? They shut down everything and everyone that opposed them. No publication, no speeches, nothing that would oppose what we're doing. And yet they want to claim that we're against the fascism of the right. So I wonder how this is going to play out for Joe Biden. Joe Biden made a remark that harkens back to Hillary Clinton. Remember what she called Trump supporters? Deplorables. Remember that? Now Joe Biden is on the record as saying there are probably anywhere from 10 to 15% of the people out there that are just not good people. Wow, let's break this down. Of course, remember Trump being accused of calling all immigrants, illegal or legal, coming from Mexico, bad people. And remember they referred to him, he's worried about the brown menace. And when he said that Mexico's not sending us their best people, they're sending us a lot of thugs and rapists and criminals. That's true. That is true. That's what many coming across were looking to do. Not all of them. Many were. And, of course, he got cut repeatedly by the left making racist remarks against him. And, of course, then Hillary made her deplorable statement about any Trump supporter, be you black, white, whatever. You're deplorable. Now Joe Biden is saying, do you really think, or he said, do we really think this is as good as we could be as a nation? I don't think the vast majority of people think that. There are probably anywhere from 10 to 15% of the people out there that are just not very good people. But that's not who we are. The vast majority of the people are decent. We have to appeal to that. We have to unite people, bring them together, bring them together. He said, the words the president says matter. So when the president stands up and divides people all the time, you're going to get the worst of us to come out. So says Joe Biden. Just 24 hours after he said, I'm going to be a peacemaker. I will not traffic in fear and division following the death and protest over George Floyd. He said, I won't fan the flames of hate. He just did. He set a whole new fire. Now the left is going to like it and love it. But there are members out there, Trump supporters. Is he calling us? Is he calling us not good people? Could there be good people on both sides? Oh my gosh, that harkens back to what Trump had said at one time. We are into so much name-calling now in this nation, and every time we do it, it's divisive. There's no other way around it. Somebody's going to call you a name. Are you going to like them, or are you going to suddenly get your back stiff? And, of course, we still have those saying what we need to do as we begin this hour is get rid of police. That'll solve everything. Let me give you an example of what happened in one Cleveland location during the rioting. Stand by, please.
Love and happiness. Wait a minute. o'clock in the morning, yeah, talking about how she can make it right, yeah.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
So once again, what are you allowed to say without being criticized and being divisive all the time, or simply exercising your First Amendment rights? If you are protesting something and you're on the left, you're entitled for everything. But even members of the left go astray, as we talked about the New York Times. Something went astray with the New York Times. There's a website, Vox, V-O-X, V-O-X.com. It's a liberal outlet. And a senior correspondent for that left-wing website also talked about abolishing or defunding police, saying it might be a good idea to abolish the police. Yes and no. Because what the editor did actually was saying, I'm sorry, but abolish the police seems like a poorly thought out idea that's gotten popular with shocking speed. So see, originally he was not in favor of that idea. But when he got pushed back by the left, he started defending it. Saying, well, a lot of people tell me this isn't going to be taken literally. It's a call for defunding or reform. In other words, don't blame me. I was just reporting it because he said simply, abolishing police, not a good idea. He obviously acknowledges that wouldn't be a good idea. But the left members come crying out, you can't say that. It might be a very good idea. And then he starts retreating even more. He said, maybe shrinking the police, maybe that's better than abolishing. He said, there are different goals, one much more defensible than the other. He ended up simply apologizing, talking to a number of people I respect about the framing of the original tweet. I do feel like it was a mistake. It was far dismissive, and I ironically complained about condescending replies. And again, his opening statement that he had to capitulate is saying in his own tweet, I'm sorry, but abolish the police seems like a poorly thought idea. And they came after him. You do know, I'm sure you know, that many of those hurt by the violence of the streets, not just big corporations and so forth, families in some neighborhoods. In Detroit, I'm looking at a story of a father of five. He's been working on a home, fixing it up, and his work truck was parked there. And when the rioters came through, why not attack this house, set it on fire too? He said, I've done everything right. How am I going to tell my kids? This is a black man saying, I did everything right. I've been here trying to fix things up, take care of my family. They destroyed the house we're going to live in. They destroyed my truck. The rioters, not protesters, rioters. We don't know the percentage of those rioting and burning and torching his home and his truck. We don't know the racial breakout. But the bottom line is they were rioting, not protesting, and hurting some of the very people they claimed to be wanting to help. You know, a 22-year-old woman was killed the other day. That was happening Monday, leaving a protest in Iowa. Her family is now saying, this kind of stuff needs to stop. No family needs to be grieving this way. She was shot after being at a protest that was basically a protest, but then it got violent, and they're leaving. She's in a car, and somebody fires a shot and kills her. Nope, don't jump into the police. No one is saying at all that it was the police. No one is. They don't know who it was, but no one is saying police were involved. Abolish police, though. Why not? Or dismantle them, defund them, so they can't do their job any better. Well, look what happened in Ohio, Cleveland, Ohio. A bakery owner and her family and employees said we had something like 400 and 500 rioters outside the storefront. A few of them had their signs saying, hands up. But at one point, she points out the man with his arms raised kneeled on the brick sidewalk and started trying to shatter windows. She said, we had to brandish rifles to get them to go away. We'd called police, and they said, we can't get there. You're going to have to do the best you can until we do. Same thing happened in L.A. the other day, another business. A Mexican minority-owned business. selling instruments, band instruments. And they were on the verge of being looted. Another minority group trying to make a living. And they were on the verge of being looted, and they were calling for help. And police said, we'll get there if we can, as soon as we can. But if you've got weapons inside, we suggest you defend your property. The rioters, those looting, arson, they don't really care who suffers. They really don't. And yet members on the left give them a pass, even the left mainstream media. Well, we understand why they're doing this. Is that going to replace that Detroit father's home that he was building or his truck? Is that going to make things better for him and his family? All right, coming up the next hour, we're going to get into, again, this attack on Drew Brees for his statement. And he retracts it, apologizes, and continues to be under attack. But yet there are those coming forward for his defense. And we're going to talk about the white privilege issue. And John LaBoutière will join us from New York. And before we wrap up today's program, I want to take you back to 1963. 1963, an August day in D.C., and a speech from Martin Luther King Jr. Please stand by.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors, USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.